Accession number 14932, Norman Edwards, reel 7.
Mr. Edwards, reel 7. You were telling me how the officer came along.
Yes, the officer came along and said, "Why didn't you fire that gun?" And I said, "What do you think these are?" I was rather hurt because the empty cases were still on the ground, you see. "Oh, you did fire it," I said. "Yes," he said, "good man, good man," and disappeared. That was all. So we'd apparently done the right thing, although we couldn't see a target. We'd assumed that the Germans would have to come from their trenches to ours, and we'd hoped that while they were doing that, our gun would have...
Now, would you have... How many machine gun... Lewis gun sections would you have in B Company, then? Lewis gun teams. How many Lewis gun teams would you have in B Company at that time?
Oh, that's a fair question. Not quite as long as I could. I think it was 2. I'm not quite sure. It might have been 4, but
do you remember?
I can't remember anybody else.
But the Lewis gun teams, unlike the Maxim teams, were part of the company, weren't they?
Oh, in the Maxim guns, there were six men in a section for the Maxim gun.
But in the Lewis gun teams were part of the company. They weren't part of a separate machine gun section, were they?
No, they were part of the company.
And do you remember who was in your team on the Lewis gun? Do you remember any of the characters who were in your Lewis gun team?
They were ordinary chaps that were allotted to you, and you got to know them, and you trained them up in these things, and then gradually you got to know, you know, the ones that got guts are the ones that got funk.
Who were the ones you remember best, and which Lewis gunners were with you? Is this where Jelly Stevens came in?
Who was it? I can't remember now. I don't think there were any of the ex-machine gunners. It was all new men from the company.
Jelly Stevens had been a Maxim gunner, had he?
I think so.
Okay.
Yes, I'm not quite sure, but I think he was.
So, the Lewis gun, would there be 4 men in the team, or 6?
That's right, yes.
The 4?
I can't think of all their names. They were not sort of...
It's all right.
I know there was one chap that couldn't write a letter to somebody, and I used to write a letter to his uncle. For him.
Were there many men?
The names of those chaps elude me at the
moment. All right. Were there many men who couldn't write? Hmm? Were there many men who couldn't write?
Oh, I don't think so.
Now, did you go home on leave at any time?
I had one leave.
When was that?
That was when I was with the Maxims.
Could you tell me what the leave was like? What do you remember of your leave? Could you tell me about it? I mean, what would you do on leave? I mean, what was the journey back?
It was very nice, sort of. You were told you were buzzed off down to the boat and went ashore, and you met people in. I remember walking down the road in Bishopston, Bristol, and meeting a fellow named Popjoy, and he said, "Good God," he said, "I thought you were killed." I said, "No, I haven't quite. I'm still knocking around that." But it was a wonderful experience to be able to walk around with my fiance and you know, be human, sleep in a bed and so forth. Wonderful, wonderful experience.
How long did you have? A week?
I think it was a week, yes.
Did people treat you as a returning hero, or were there too many of people there?
Well, there were quite a lot of them. If you were on leave, you were certainly given special attention, come round to tea and have a meal with us and that sort of thing. I was never a man for... I was a teetotaler, I think, at that time. and I had nothing to do with pubs or anything of that sort.
Were there any?
I refused the grog issue on one or two occasions.
Were there any superstitions about going home on leave, about when you came back from leave, or would you not?
I don't think I suspected, no. I don't think I didn't feel that, no.
Now, there are just a few points I want to ask you about this time. How were the Lewis guns organised? Because you seem to have had, during this whole period between January and July, when you were on the Somme, you seem to have been unhappy with the way the machine guns were organised and you were treated, you know, within the company.
Well, we were simply occasionally given orders by the company commander to locate a Lewis gun at a certain points in the line where they were holding the line. But other than that, we were more or less left on our own to train these chaps. There were two or three men that were sort of put forward as suggested Lewis gunners, and they seemed to be very decent sort of chaps, and we just told them all we knew about the Lewis gun, allow them to use it and get used to it.
But in your diary, you're very unhappy about the way the Lewis gunners are treated. Do you not remember that so much now?
I say it was unhappy.
In your diary, you keep saying how unhappy you are with the status of the Lewis gunners.
Yes. Well, yes, they were the men that were transferred to come under my command were a very nice crowd, very nice chaps indeed. I made personal friendships with them. I'm afraid I don't. I think I probably, if there'd been something in the diary which was unpleasant, I would have noted it. But the ordinary way, as we were happily doing that thing, I probably just commented to that effect.
Because you several times went to see Elliot, Captain Elliot, your company commander,
yes,
about what the Lewis guns were supposed to be doing. Do you remember what you were saying to him?
Well, I was probably making suggestions, yes, that for the location of the guns, for instance, I remember one area facing in Serre, and there was an extension on the left flank with a it wasn't the front line and it wasn't the second line, but there was a communication trench between the two, and I remember suggesting to Captain Elliot that I could make a position halfway between the front line and the back line which would give me plenty of cover, and it was from that position that later on, they, as I mentioned, I think the last time, the front were raided, and the fellows came along the next day and said, "Why didn't you fire your gun?" And I said, "What do you think these are?"
That was, I think, on the 18th of March when, yes, we looked at the diary. What did you think of the quality of the reinforcements that the battalion was getting? You know, when you got replacements for people, yes, who'd been killed and wounded. And you had some American volunteers. Do you remember them? And what you thought of them?
Well, I'm afraid that you just had to take people as they came. They were all dressed in the same sort of uniform, and it's only when you were really under stress and strain their sort of qualities came out. I've no recollection of any time of any man being a definite funk, you know, and hiding, that sort of thing. They all seemed to see, stand up to it. If the Hun was spraying you with bullets, that sort of thing, you'd keep your head down, but there was no sort of crawling back and getting into a dugout out of the way.
Now, at one point, you applied to go to the Ministry of Munitions. You know, they asked for people with engineering experience, and you applied to go to the Ministry of Munitions. Do you remember,
yes,
that? What were you thinking about then? Why were you doing that?
I'd forgotten that. I know. I remember talking to somebody the other, I don't think it was Elliot, of saying that I had served an apprenticeship with an engineering firm, and if there was any question of people being taken from the line to serve there, I felt perhaps I'd got the qualities that they were looking for. I didn't sort of use it as an excuse to get out of the trenches.
Now, another point is, what about, you were at one point taken out for training for the Somme offensive. Do you remember?
Training for
the Somme offensive.
Oh, yes.
And you did this blob advance formation in blobs. Do you remember your training? What were you doing as Lewis gunners during the training?
That's a difficult one to answer now. Well, I know we did certain actions sort of behind the line, you know, sort of orders were given to advance and that sort of thing, and we would be advancing with a crowd of people on the flanks, and mostly to sort of cover them as much as possible, but it was purely theoretical.
One thing you were worried about was that you were only supposed to carry 10 drums of Lewis gun ammunition, and you were worried about that. You thought that wasn't enough. Do you remember what you were?
Well, 10 of those drums, you see, I wish I could tell you exactly how many rounds there was in each circle. I can't remember how many guns there were, but. I know if you put one of those circuits on and press the button, it would certainly, within about 15 to 20 seconds, it would go bang, 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 finished. And you, that's why you've got to have a number one and two to do the refilling of those drums to keep you going.
So 10 drums would only last a short while?
The what?
10 drums wouldn't last very long?
No.
Now, you had a story about the bad weather. Would you like to tell us
that? Yes, it was one period when we had torrential rain. And in the trenches, there was always a sump covered with a sort of corrugated piece of wood, you see. Well, that sump filled up, the piece of wood floated away, and there was a depth of muddy water in that thing, probably 3 to 4 feet deep. And some messenger was trying to get through this thing, and the stuff was nearly up to his waist, this muddy water, and one of our men who had been on duty at the time was rather a short, undersized little man, and he roared with laughter at this other man who was in the mud and the hat. And the fellow who was in the mud with the water up to his waist turned to him and said, "You can laugh, but if it had been you, you would have be well drowned."
Right. Now, I think now we'll move on to the Battle of the Somme. I think that's the next thing. Yeah. Do you remember the bombardment? You stayed in and out of the Somme area throughout that 1916. Now, do you remember the preliminary bombardment?
Yes, I do. We were stationed on the slopes of some hill. It would probably be 2 to 3 miles from our front line. And I remember particularly the two things there that always stick in my memory. One was that down in the valley near us, there was a brigade of men. And one evening, they all struck up that beautiful song about the Scottish one, "I'll be in Scotland before you," you know. What's the name of it called? You take the high road and I'll take the low road, I'll be in Scotland before you. And this song was sort of taken up by everybody, and there must have been 3,000 or 4,000 men singing it. It was most touching. And it was a beautiful evening with the setting sun on over on the hill, shining through some trees. It would have lighted the heart of Turner, I think, to paint that scene. It was a wonderful scene. But over it all, of course, there was this rumble of guns going on the whole time. And we were received an order which had come from the divisional commander, saying that tomorrow we should be advancing and we hope to win a great and glorious victory. And we all went to bed that night wondering what was going to happen. Well, at dawn the next morning, we were all wide awake and the guns were thundering away and so forth. But throughout the day, we weren't asked to move from this place or to follow up or anything of that sort. And then an order came back from headquarters saying, we have attacked the enemy and taken the front line in most places. And we all thought, well, this doesn't sound like a great and glorious victory quite. To only have captured part of the front line in places. However, that was the sort of end of the first day. And then gradually, as the days passed by, we would meet people who had been in the front. And I remember one crowd of sort of Cockney men, one of them saying, oh, we went through the so-and-sos like a dose of salts. But actually, the attack on that first day was a failure, because we lost thousands of men who were killed. There was one, I know, one particular division that lost 600 men, either were killed or wounded. And each day we wondered when our turn was coming, whether we were going to be attacked. And about the fourth or fifth day, we got orders that we were going to be attacking the next day Beaumont Hamel. And we thought, well, now this is it. Well,
how did you feel?
Well, we sort of felt this is it. We've got to do our best and so forth. And at dawn, no, at dusk rather, we got all our equipment on and started to march. And as it got darker, we got down nearer the line. Bombardments were louder and so forth. And we got right down to our own front line near Beaumont Hamel. And while we were there waiting for the actual go-ahead business, a word came, retire, the attack is cancelled. And we were all a bit disappointed, but back we went.
Disappointed? Well, now,
looking back on the thing, that was in July, about the 15th or 20th, 1916. Beaumont Hamel was captured by a division the following November. If we'd gone on that morning, we'd have been cut to pieces, because it was one of the strongest points of the German line.
You mean round about the 5th of July, I think that's... Mm-hmm. About the 5th of July, not the 15th.
I can't remember the exact date. I know it was after the battle had started. It's probably in my diary, the correct date.
About the 5th, I think, yeah.
It may be the 15th. But I know all I could remember was attack Bourbon Hamel, and then it was cancelled at the last minute by the grace of God. Otherwise, we should probably have been slaughtered.
Now, you had a Lewis gun officer appointed, Lieutenant Montague. Do you remember him?
Just about, yes. He had very little to do for us.
And you were in trenches and Sayre in front of John Copps.
Yes.
That's where in the end you were to attack from.
John Copps was with on that front line between Heberturn and the south. There was four clumps of trees. And the troops, or they'd got them, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John Copps. And we were, we'd been in John Copps in the earlier days before the fighting, where it was just an ordinary sort of post and usual sniping and so forth took place. And after the Battle of the Somme had started, we were ordered to take over the line at on the John Copps area. And one night we went up there, and the place was, the devastation was ghastly. If you can see, if that book of my photographs there, what the state of things, stretchers and bits and pieces, a lot of dead men lying around. But I also remember particularly that the night we got up to that particular area to take over the ground, it was then that I looked over the parapet to find a right place to put my Lewis guns, that I saw all these little twinkling lights everywhere as the flares were going up from the German lines. There was a whole twinkling, all the whole area was twinkling the ground. And it was pieces of tin which had been put on the backs of the haversacks of the division that had attacked on the 1st of July. And these were all men who'd been shot down. They were lying with their face down, the packs were showing up for our own sort of airmen to see, which was a German man, which was a French, an Englishman. But while we were there, orders came along to say that a patrol would be sent out to make contact with the Germans to let them consider that we were going to attack there. And each patrol, each post in the area was to send out so many smoke bombs. Well, at this particular hour of the night when this happened, out went the smoke bombs, and the patrol probably went out somewhere. We don't know what happened to them. But the response from the Germans was absolutely incredible. Very, very heavy fighting, bombing and so forth. And a lot of trench mortar. Then you could see the sparks going up, and then they'd disappear, and then it would come down, and bang would go the thing, making a crater about 10 feet across. But I also particularly remember that thing, that one hadn't got any real cover there. I was simply lying down and crouching down and hoping the thing wouldn't drop on me. And during a lull in the firing, I heard a noise there was a trench to my left. It sounded like as though something had jumped in. I thought, that's a German, he's got a bayonet, and the next minute I shall be impaled. And then it came at me, and it was a poor dog, frightened to death, came and cringed and lay down at my feet. I shall never forget that, poor thing. I'd thought that was going to be a German, and I was probably be the end of me. But anyway, the gradually the thing faded out, that particular thing. Whether we pressed it upon the Germans that we were going to attack them that day, because the object of that attack was to let them think we were going to attack that part of the line. Hence the intensity of their reaction and the barrage. That was one of the incidents I shall never forget, that crouching down on the ground and seeing these sparks go up from the trench mortars and then disappear, and then a few minutes later, 10 feet craters, you see. I quite expected to be blown to pieces that day, but it didn't happen, by the grace of God. For a short time, then we came in again, and I remember that on the second time in, we were, one of our jobs as the machine gun section was to guard a dugout in which we got about 15 or 20 German captured men.
This is while you're out of the line?
Pardon?
While you're out of the line, or while you're in the line?
In the line, yes. They were in sort of, I think it was probably the second line. It was a pretty deep dugout, but these chaps were there, and we simply were on guard. And one of them spoke English. And he did say something about there had been some talk there some battleship being sunk, some famous battleship being sunk, and he said I know he'd heard about this, and the two views were conflicting. I forget what the details were now.
I think you were arguing about Jutland. I think you were arguing with him about Jutland, the Battle of Jutland.
Yes,
that
yes,
just
probably.
Happened. So what's the next thing? Is there anything else before you were briefed? Because the attack you made on John Copps was on the 21st of July.
Yes.
Is there anything else you remember before that attack?
All that, it was in and out, just holding the trenches in case the Germans attacked us, which they didn't do. Oh yes, yes. Well, that was after the abortive Beaumont-Hamel business. Yes, I never I went into action. I used to put a Mills bomb in each of my pockets, and the Mills bombs, the thing. Well, you know the thing. It was a corrugated thing with a handle, and there was a split pin through there with a ring on the end holding it, and if you were good to use it, you'd get hold of this ring and pull it out like that, and as long as you held on to that thing, the spring loaded thing was that, but the moment you threw it like that, the thing would jump forward, and then 5 seconds later the fuse had been started, the bomb would explode. Well, at that day, after the Beaumont-Hamel thing had been called off, as we got absolutely back, tired out, a limber came to help us about 2 or 3 miles back, you see. And I said, well, put all the stuff in the limber. We put the guns in, and then the two or three canvas bags with the circular drums in. And I very foolishly now took my two bombs out and put them into the top, on the top of the one of a bag full of these, about 6 of these drums of ammunition, and pushed it all into the back of the limber. And I caught hold of a little bit of a chain that was holding the rear board, and we started off back, and I literally walked in my sleep. We were so sort of exhausted after all this. And we got back to somewhere behind the line. We were allowed to go to sleep with the inner dressed in our kit. Anyway, the next morning, I said, come on, chaps, let's sort our things out. We got the stuff out of the limber and put it on the ground and opened it up. And the first thing I did when I opened it up, I saw one of my bombs, that split pin, had got halfway out with the vibrations, I suppose, of the thing. If it had gone the whole way out, of course the fuse would have gone. There were, I suppose, 10 bombs in there and about 2,000 or 3,000 rounds of ordinary ammunition, which would have all gone up in the thing. But by the grace of God, that holding thing, I was able to push the split tin back into its proper position. But it was halfway out. There were two lugs, and it'd come out of one lug, and it was just being held by the one thing. It was a miraculous escape. If we'd gone another mile behind that thing with the limber jogging along the road, it would probably have exploded.